Okay, let's dive in. Picture the tri-border area. What's the most powerful tool for moving, well, huge amounts of dirty money? It's not a speedboat, not a drone.
No, not at all. It's much simpler, almost mundane.
It's just a piece of paper.
Exactly. And that's the fundamental thing to grasp here. Smuggling, well, that moves physical stuff.
Right. Drugs, guns, whatever.
But money laundering, especially trade-based money laundering or TBML, that moves stories. Stories written on paper, invoices, manifests, customs forms.
It's such a critical difference. And it really hits home when you look at this Pavo Real PY case in Asuncion. You've got a judge reading out names, 23 people.
All linked to this big-time trafficker, Jarvis Chimini's Pavam.
And the core evidence connecting them. Not piles of cash or drugs seized at the border.
No, it was stacks and stacks of documents, company registrations, property titles, wire transfer slips, just paper.
It's kind of mind-blowing. The goods themselves almost don't matter sometimes.
Sometimes they don't even exist. The whole transaction is fabricated on paper. So our mission for you today is really to unpack TBML. Think of it like a five-act play, a crime story unfolding entirely through these documents.
Okay, a five-act play. So TBML, just to be clear for everyone, is moving illicit value using the paperwork of legitimate trade.
Precisely. Using invoices, certificates, routing slips, all that stuff as camouflage.
Got it. So what are the five acts? What's the plot here?
It's pretty methodical. Act one, you build the container, the legal company structure.
Okay.
Act two, you write the dodgy invoice. That's the key valuation trick.
Inflating the price.
Right. Act three, you break the money trail using payment detours.
Paying from somewhere unexpected.
Yep. Act four, you add confusing geography, a paper detour for the goods.
Making it look like it went somewhere it didn't.
Exactly. And finally, act five, the cleaned money lands in a real asset, the integration asset.
Container, invoice, payment, detour, integration asset.
Right.
Got it. Let's start with Act One, the container. You can't just buy a huge company with drug money, can you?
Huh, no. Well, you can try, but you'll get caught pretty quick. The bank flags go up immediately.
So you need something that looks legit.
You need a front, a corporate shell, a structure that looks like a normal business. And that Pavo Real case, it's textbook Act One.
Those 23 defendants, they weren't the big boss.
No, they were the fronts, the testaferros, as they say. Their job was setting up and running these shell businesses for Pavam.
And what's really interesting from the sources is who these fronts were, not just, hired suits.
No, it was heavily reliant on his family, his
But
clan.
like who exactly?
Mother, stepfather, wife, son, daughter, brother, son-in-law. A whole family affair.
Wow.
And allegedly, they were getting instructions directly from Pavan during prison visits, sometimes weekly visits,
Weekly visits to run a criminal enterprise.
to get guidance on buying assets, setting up companies, using those corporate containers.
That seems risky, though, involving your whole family. Wouldn't that make it easier for someone to talk or for authorities to connect the dots?
It definitely increases the risk of discovery. You're right about that. If one person flips, they know a lot, but
Wow.
it dramatically reduces the risk of betrayal. Think about it. Who do you trust more than family when you're dealing with millions, maybe hundreds of millions, in illicit
Right,
funds?
loyalty becomes paramount.
It's the most valuable commodity. You're trusting them with the whole architecture of your hidden empire. So that calculated risk, loyalty over exposure, makes sense in that context.
And the scale here is just staggering. Prosecutors are going after assets worth over 150 million US dollars.
An immense amount, all built and managed essentially through prison visits and paperwork.
So once you have this container, this family-run network of shell companies, how do you actually move the money into it?
Yeah.
That brings us to Act Two, right?
Act two, the invoice trick. This is where the paper starts doing the heavy lifting financially.
Sobre facturation. Over-invoicing. We hear the term a lot.
It's fundamental. You take ordinary goods, soy, electronics, lumber, whatever, and you write an invoice saying they cost way more than they actually do.
Okay, so let's use simple numbers. I ship something worth, say, $1 million.
Right.
But the invoice I send says it's worth $1.3 million.
Perfect example. That extra $300,000, that's your dirty money. It's now disguised on paper as part of the legitimate cost of the goods.
But hang on, why would the bank paying this just accept a 30% markup on, say, basic commodities? Don't they check market prices?
They do, or they should. But the criminals are clever. They don't just send an invoice with a weirdly high number. They justify it on paper. They
Yeah.
add fake charges, premium grade, special handling fees, expedited shipping surcharge, consulting services related to the shipment, plausible sounding reasons.
Okay, so the paperwork looks reasonable, even if the price is high.
Exactly. The bank clerk sees an invoice, supporting documents, a reason for the price, and the payment goes through. The dirty money slips out, masked as a normal business expense.
So the paper itself creates a sort of phantom value that the system processes. And this isn't just theoretical.
No, not at all. You mentioned Argentina Customs there, investigated major agribusiness firms for exactly this, sobrefacturation in soy deals. It's a real large-scale technique.
The paper is the tool. Okay, so the invoice is inflated, the money is moving. But doesn't the source of that extra money still leave a trail? If you paid the inflated invoice from a known dodgy account.
That's the next problem they solve, which leads us straight into Act 3, the payment detour. You have to break that link between the duty money's origin and the trade payment. Third-party payments, simple concept, huge impact. In normal trade, the buyer pays the seller, right?
Sure. Or the buyer's bank pays the seller's bank.
Right. But here, they bring in someone else entirely. An entity that isn't the buyer, isn't the seller, makes the actual wire transfer for that inflated invoice.
Ah, so the money paying for the goods doesn't come directly from the company that supposedly bought them.
Precisely. It might come from, say, a completely unrelated money service business in a different country. Or through a complex chain of banks.
And that just obscures everything.
Instantly. It severs that clean audit trail. You can no longer easily trace the payment back to the original source of funds. It's a financial sleight of hand.
And this is where things like nested correspondent banking come in. That sounds complicated.
It can be, but the idea is important. A correspondent bank lets a foreign bank process transactions through its system, right?
Yeah, for international stuff.
Nested means there's another layer. A smaller, maybe less regulated, or even shell bank is using that foreign bank's correspondent account, and their clients are hidden deeper inside.
So the big, reputable bank processes the payment.
But they might have no idea who the actual originator of the funds was deep inside that nested relationship.
Wow, okay. It's like hiding inside layers of legitimacy.
It's a perfect sleeve for these payments. That's why authorities like the federal police down in Foz do Iguazu really scrutinize third-party payments and these kinds of forex movements. They know that's a prime spot for the trail to be deliberately broken.
Okay, so the money source is hidden. What's next? Act 4.
Act 4. The documentary detour. We've done financial sleight of hand. Now it's time for geographic sleight of hand.
Meaning?
Sometimes the goods themselves take a direct route, but the paperwork. The paperwork goes on a little vacation. It tells a different story at where the goods went.
Like the shipment is going from Brazil to Chile.
But the documents claim it made a stopover in, say, Panama, or maybe a free trade zone, or a bonded warehouse in Venezuela on paper.
Even if the actual ship never went near there.
Exactly. That fictitious stop generates more paperwork. New bills of lading, maybe a new certificate of origin, customs forms for the phantom stopover.
Ah, I see. Each extra document adds complexity.
And deniability.
Yeah.
It makes it incredibly difficult for investigators to reconstruct the real journey of the goods and, more importantly, the money attached to them. It muddies the waters.
The Department of Justice indictments often mention this kind of thing, right? Misdescribed consignments, false routing.
All the time. It's standard choreography to intentionally confuse the supply chain using paper.
Okay, so let's recap. We've built the front company, inflated the invoice, used a third party to pay, and created a fake journey on paper.
Mm-hmm. The money should be looking pretty clean by now.
It is. Which brings us to the final act, Act 5, integration. Where does this cleaned up value actually end up?
It needs to land somewhere solid, right?
Yeah.
Become a real asset in the legitimate economy.
Exactly. An integration asset. And it needs to be something that can absorb value, especially value that might include a quiet premium without raising too many eyebrows.
Like what? What kind of assets work well?
Well, in the tri-border area and similar regions, one classic is livestock. Cattle, specifically.
Cattle, seriously. Not diamonds or luxury cars.
Cattle is surprisingly effective. Think about it. Prices aren't fixed like gold. They vary wildly based on weight, breed, perceived quality.
Ah, so it's easy to justify paying a bit more.
A lot more sometimes. A 15%, 20%, even higher premium can be explained away as superior breeding stock or prime quality. It's elastic.
Okay, elasticity. And what else? The logistics. It's high volume, sometimes still cash heavy in parts of the chain, and there isn't like a global database tracking every single cow.
So you overpay for the cattle using the clean funds.
Then you can sell those same cattle into the legitimate market pretty quickly, maybe at a small paper loss, but you've successfully converted your laundered funds into legitimate agricultural revenue. The cash is now beef, basically.
How do investigators spot that?
They look for patterns. Repeated deals with the same ranchers or buyers, especially if the pricing consistently seems off compared to the actual weight or grade of the animals. Constant, unexplained high prices are a big flag.
Makes sense. What's another major integration asset? You hear about art a lot.
Art and antiquities, yes. And people often think art is special, you know, because it's prestigious or culturally significant.
But it's the same trick, isn't it?
It's exactly the same trick as the soy invoice or the cattle. It just relies on an even greater degree of subjective valuation.
Because who's to say what a particular painting is really worth?
Precisely. It's the ultimate elastic asset. Value is moved through wildly subjective prices, private sales where the buyer might be hidden.
Overpricing, maybe even fake sales documented on paper.
All of it. The Financial Action Task Force, FATF, pointed this out again recently. The lack of transparency, especially in private art sales, is a huge vulnerability.
So just to hammer this home for you listening, the power isn't in the Picasso itself. It's in the agreement on its price. The paperwork legitimizing that price is where the laundering happens.
The price is the fiction. The paperwork locks in that fiction. It's the same valuation trick, just wearing a fancier costume than soybeans or cows.
Okay, this is fascinating. So understanding this whole five-act play, this paper logic, how does that translate into action if you're trying to spot this?
You have to fundamentally shift your mindset. Stop asking what's physically in the truck.
And start asking.
What story are these documents telling me? What is the logic of this paper trail? Treat the documents themselves as the potential crime scene.
Right. So let's walk through the key checks again. If you're looking at a big train deal, what's the first most basic check for that invoice trick, the superfacturation?
Pull the invoice, obviously, but then you absolutely must compare the unit price against reliable independent market data for that commodity on that specific date.
Okay. Price check first.
Yeah. Adjust for shipping, sure. But if you see your client consistently paying, say, 25% over market for bulk standard goods with no clear documented reason.
That's your red flag for the valuation trick.
Big red flag. You've likely found the inflated value.
Okay, price looks dodgy. What's check number two? Payment integrity.
You absolutely have to verify who paid. Is the entity that sent the wire transfer the same entity listed as the buyer or consignee on the shipping documents?
And if it's not? If some third party paid.
Alarm bells. Especially if that third party is in an unrelated business or in a high-risk jurisdiction or using one of those complex nested accounts we talked about. That audit trail is broken. You flag it immediately.
Got it. Price check, pair check. What about the geographic fiction, the documentary detour? How do you spot that in the logistics paperwork?
You need to look for recurring patterns over time and across different deals. Map the intermediaries.
Like brokers, warehouses.
Exactly. Are the same, maybe slightly obscure. Freight forwarders, customs brokers, or bonded warehouses showing up again and again, especially if they're in weird locations for the supposed trade route.
Ah, so if the same warehouse in Panama keeps appearing on paper for shipments supposedly going between totally different countries.
That suggests it's not there for actual logistics. It's likely a paper hop location, inserted purely to complicate the documentation and create deniability.
Price, payer, and patterns in the paper trail. That makes sense.
Really brings it back to that core idea we started with.
That smuggling moves things.
Cocaine, timber, whatever. Tangible goods.
But money laundering moves stories. It manipulates the paper narrative so that the money can move freely and integrate into the legitimate world.
That whole five-act sequence container, invoice, payment detour, paper hop, integration asset, that's the plot. That's the story they write on paper.
And once you learn to read that paper logic, the hidden routes just, well, they become visible.
They really do. It's often the simplest looking document, like that invoice, that holds the key to unlocking the whole scheme.
It's all about that elastic valuation, isn't it? Finding ways to justify a price on paper that lets the dirty money flow.
And that trick repeats everywhere, just in different forms. The price itself, that number on the page, becomes the perfect disguise.
Which is maybe something to think about. Where else do we see value manipulated on paper?
Exactly. And next time, we're going to zoom right in on two of those prime examples. The high-speed, high-volume world of cattle trading and the opaque, high-value market for art. We'll see how that same valuation trick just puts on a different costume, but the underlying mechanism is identical.